Hello and welcome to Film Weekly's second part of our look back at 2007. I'm Jason Solomons, and you may recall that last week myself and my illustrious panel of guests began reviewing the year in blockbusters, art house, documentaries and awards. Well, we'll pick up where we left off. Plus, there'll be a Christmas treat for you in the shape of a special interview with Mr. Santa Claus himself, Lord Attenborough. But let's rejoin the action this week. My guests are Zan Brooks, editor of Guardian Film Online, Larushka Ivanzadeh, the queen of reviews at Metro Newspaper, and Kath Clark, writer for The Guardian and Time Out. We're all still in very high spirits and full of bubbly as we launch back into our assessment of a year in film. Right, now, one of the great things about our job is watching films when everyone else is at work, and we should be enjoying ourselves. I like watching sort of hot French actresses just disrobe for no reason in the middle of the day and calling it art. I like watching mindless Hollywood nonsense and calling it work and pretending I didn't enjoy it at all. What were your guilty pleasures of the year?
Okay, I'm really going to ruin any critical cred you might have thought I actually ever possessed.
We didn't get you on it for cred,
darling. I really liked Love Wrecked. Do you remember that? It's a really bad teen comedy with Amanda Bynes in it. Which has the best... She's a bookish teenager who obviously never reads a book on camera because that's really boring. And she's in love with this pop heartthrob called Jason something or other. And she gets a job in a holiday camp, which ends up with her being in a very likely, unlikely scenario, washed ashore on a deserted island with him. And it has my favourite line of the year, which is when she goes, "We're marooned." And he goes, "What, you mean like the colour?" Which is like, sorry, anyway, I absolutely love that film. And I think Amanda Bynes is a very underrated, wonderfully very talented young comic actress.
She was in a film which really surprised me. One of my surprises was Hairspray, which I thought was going to be awful. And I thought was brilliant in the way that Grease was brilliant for our generation. That I think people will be walking around singing Hairspray songs soon. And I thought she was quite good in that as well.
Yeah,
she loves, she overacts.
Just watch that space. It's all about, I'm just spotting talent here. It's, right.
Love Wrecked. You heard it here first. And we thank you for that. Zan, did you have any nonsense to match that?
I don't know if I can compete with Love Wrecked. I'm really racking my brains. I liked Superbad. Mm-hmm. I'm a kind of sucker for sort of idiotic, gross-out teen comedies. It was No, There's Something About Mary, but it was still pretty good. I think probably my real guiltiest pleasure, and my toes are curling even saying this, is I kind of quite like Rocky Balboa.
Oh, I did too.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. It was absolutely preposterous and just ludicrous on every single level. But it kind of did the job.
It was quite sad, I thought.
Kind of did.
It had a sort of blueness
to it. And he's obviously such a vile human being, Sylvester Stallone. I mean, this is my own opinion. I've never met the man. He might be wonderful.
He couldn't
beat
you up.
He couldn't beat me up. He's 60 years old. He couldn't get up the
stairs.
He can
still run up those stairs.
But yeah, I kind of liked it.
Good shout, Rocky Balboa. Kath, did you have any guilty moments at all? Were you totally doing it all for the good of art?
Does it more or less? But is it too fancy to say Eastern Promises, because that got terrible reviews? But I loved it.
I loved it too.
Again, there's Viggo Mortensen in his pants with all those tattoos. I mean, it was brilliant.
Yes. No. I mean, and he took the pants off at some stage as well. You might have noticed, or you were just being too polite.
I wasn't going to mention that on the Guardian.
Something to tackle, I think. See what I did there. I thought that was one of the best scenes of the year, that naked fight in Ironmonger Row Bars. Yeah. And I do actually go there as well, so I hope they've cleaned it since then. I think the other trend of this year has been these war movies, the renditions, The Lion for Lambs, the Redacteds, the whatever, all the war movies. I mean, really, they didn't ignite at the box office. I think that's a shame, because it just means people are kind of ignoring the war and maybe going for the flip side of that. Hollywood's going more fun.
They're flat out bad movies, surely. They're these terrible kind of hand-wringing, cautious, we can't really kind of come out and say what we think. We've got to kind of win people over in this sort of softly approach. They're just really compromised, boring films.
So they're not really criticising anyone, are they? Rendition doesn't criticise anyone.
You watch something like Lions for Lambs, you can see why the Democratic Party is in the state that it's in America, because they're just so timid, so cowardly. And they're terrified of causing offence.
Mm. I'm looking forward to, I think, early in the new year, Tommy Lee Jones, I think, is wonderful in a film called In the Valley of Ella. I think that's a really strong movie with a really kind of strong subversive element to it. But that is for another show, another day. Guilty pleasures, I think Love Wrecked wins easily. But as you enjoyed it, I think as it's Christmas time, it is time for us to roast the Film Weekly turkeys. What was your massive, massive stinkeroony flop, leave the cinema, hate it, and never want to see it again, Zan?
You see, again, this is the good side of running through the party, kind of just saying hello to a few people, is that I miss the ones that, are seen as the real turkeys, like something like Norbit, which I remember reading reviews of, which sounded truly appalling and offensive on so many levels.
It's disgusting.
Lions for Lambs, again, I thought was shockingly bad, considering what it was trying to do, and pompous and cowardly. I thought that was really bad. I'm just so sick of Harry Potter. Each time these things roll around, they get very kind reviews, and I always think, you know, the books are okay, the books do the job, and I go along to see these films, and I'm bored out of my skull.
Interesting, because they've got a new director this year, the British guy David Yates, and everyone said, oh, he did a very good job.
But the directors are ballast. They're absolute production line fodder. There's no kind of heart to them at all. I'm really fond of the Lord of the Rings movies. I think they're kind of pompous and self-indulgent and preposterous, but there's a certain sort of integrity about them and a certain passion. These things, you can just... They're kind of little robot films. And I can just imagine they're these sort of billion-dollar white elephants. They're going to be the equivalent of the sort of the Bay City Rollers albums in 30 years' time, where people are going to kind of look at them and think, you know, did we really love these films?
Even the Alfonso Cuarón ones.
Even that bored me rigid too.
Good. Well done, you. Thousands of children will be surrounding your house and setting it on fire.
It'll be the Jesus Camp posse. Actually, no, the Jesus Camp posse would celebrate me as their new god.
Yes,
they'd be worshipping a little cardboard.
Even more punishment. Arushka, did you have a top of the tree turkey?
It's really hard because, yes, being the opposite and seeing everything, it has to be really, really bad to be a turkey. And also there's that kind of criteria of what a turkey should be, because it surely should be a film that's really meant to be big production values, you know, fair game really. If you just have a sort of small British film that you know is going to be a bit pants,
and then it is, for example.
Yeah, exactly.
Which
Magicians.
That was really,
really
bad.
But it's done very well in my Screen International chart and around the world. It's taken like huge amounts of money in Italy, which is famous for rubbish comedies. And I always think it's because these awful and annoying British actors are dubbed by quite good actors in Italy. So someone must be quite good who voices these people and makes them popular.
I think also Sleuth would be another contender, probably.
Go on. Stick the knife in, go on.
I'm not even prepared.
He gave us not one, but three awful movies all in a row, did Kenneth Branagh this year.
I don't know which was the worst. I think perhaps actually The Magic Flute is even worse than Sleuth, but that's no recommendation for Sleuth itself, I have to say, which is this like romantic, this sort of terrible, disgusting sort of lovey in, because you had Michael Caine reprising the part that he had in the original, and then Jude, and then you had Pinter making a cameo on the television in the... Oh, it was just absolutely unspeakable. The only good thing about it was short, which I quite enjoyed. And the script was terrible. It was like this terrible sort of parody of Pinter, where everyone was speaking these really mannered kind of ridiculous sentences. I don't know. And there was this whole homoerotic subtext. Just like, ew, move away from it. It was just horrible.
You did get to see Jude Law's increasing bald spot, though, throughout that film.
I enjoyed that. I've never heard anything like when that film finished and my male colleagues all having a real cat go over. It was like, put the saucer of milk away. I was like, did you see his bald spot? Oh, yes, his hair's receding. I was like, my goodness. So, yes.
They just want to sleep with their nannies, all those people. Kath, you managed to avoid all the rubbish, really, but do you have something that really disappointed you then, if not a turkey?
Wes Anderson and the Darjeeling Limited, because I love him. I mean, you know, Bottle Rocket and Royal Tenenbaums, you know, all brilliant, great films, but I think the more he does of them, the thinner it all looks. I mean, they look so good, you know. I love Cat Stevens you know, sort of that Dollhouse aesthetic. This time it just looked as if you're watching a lot of spoilt people carry Louis Vuitton luggage. Great luggage, but I don't think there was much more to it, and I was very upset.
Yeah, that's a good... I think that sort of defines a turkey, these overstuffed things that think they're good, or that they get a lot of publicity behind them, and they come and they say, this is going to be brilliant, and they put them at Venice, or they put them in festivals, and it's very difficult to come away and go, do you know what, that was a great big pile of steaming tripe, you know that. And as you say, something like Norbit, well, we know it's rubbish. So I think the ones like like the Lions for Lambs and the Darjeelings and the Sleuths as well, which also thought it was, you know, sort of a great enterprise. My turkey of the Fountain, I thought, was... just awful, with Rachel Weisz and Hugh Jackman as a sort of time-travelling spaceship astronaut. What rubbish it was. And I also hated, with a passion, No Reservations, which starred Catherine Zeta-Jones as a chef, falling in love with Aaron Eckhart as another chef. And, I mean, she was just sort of getting fatter as the movie went on, clearly eating away through the props, sort of coming up with a nice bit of a comfit of duck, and you're thinking, where's that gone? In the next shot, it's gone. You thought maybe the continuity got it. No, she stuffed it in her mouth. It was a horrible movie about New York and money and being rich and wearing cashmere and just jutting around at dawn in wet streets and being chummy.
Quite good now.
Well, I think people, because it's one of those kind of, I have a problem with chick flicks. I think they are the worst thing. If they're no good, they are the worst thing ever. And I think that one is my top of my tree. But everyone will probably love it at Christmas. Like The Holiday last year, which was awful. Yeah, you see, and you love it. And that had Jude Law with a bald spot. Right, that was our miserable humbug, but actually quite enjoyable trashing of overstuffed turkeys. It is now time, panellists, to reveal your top five films of 2007. Do 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 do. Larushka.
Well, obviously, top of it is Lives of Others.
Oh, there'll be a Viggo Mortensen naked fighting in there.
Followed by Silent Light, followed by The Bourne Ultimatum. I actually wanted to put in Superbad stroke Knocked Up as a kind of, double disc box set. And then, you see, when you get down to number five, what can you choose? And I am going to put in Once, because I think it needs some help. And it was, no one's going to go and see a folk musical set in Ireland where she's a classical pianist, he's a busker, they make beautiful music together. It sounds absolutely unspeakable, but I thought it was simple and charming and one of the nicest films of the year.
I hated it. I really did. Irish twaddle, just twinkliness and tweeness and a big hit. I couldn't bear it at all. And I was thinking, just kiss her, all right? It's not twinkling your eyes and batting your eyes. Kiss her. But then, see, I always get this wrong. Boys in chick flicks bear no resemblance to any boys I know. And then you always think, well, girls are going to hate him, aren't they? And they'll come out and go,
you seem so thoughtful and sensitive, Jason.
Well, you see? But he wasn't. He was just mourning for some bird that he'd lost in London. I know, I ruined the romance there. No, but a lot of people liked Once. And that's your number fifth movie. Wow. Larushka, thank you very much. Zan, time for your top five.
Do I have to put them in order or can I just rattle them off?
You can put them in alphabetical order, just to confuse you.
Okay, all right, alphabetical order. Here we go. Away From Her. I liked Away From Her a lot.
Julie Christie.
Julie Christie, fantastic performance as a woman suffering from Alzheimer's. I'm really selling it now, aren't I? This is the great Christmas movie. See Julie Christie suffer in a home for people with Alzheimer's. Olympia Dukakis as the mourning wife of another inmate. But it was superbly acted. Really well scripted and just kind of worked for me. I thought it was great.
Directed by Sarah Polley,
who's a very young actress.
Very great. I really like her.
And it's a real kind of mature piece of work. It's not like your typical young actor breaking it, thinking, oh, I fancy directing and doing this kind of flashy calling card film. It was very mature and just beautiful. Yeah, lovely film. Still in alphabetical order, Control. I thought Control worked really well. I remember seeing that at Cannes and just kind of coming out on a high. I love the way the first half of it was like a kind of play for the day, sort of BBC Ken Loach kind of gritty northern kind of working class love story, and then it kind of took on this momentum. I thought that was great.
Also contains the wonderful line, "Tell me about the Macclesfield."
Tell me about Macclesfield. And the other great line when they first play their first show, and manager Rob Gretton says, "Oh, that was great, lads. Haven't seen a reaction like that since George Best got chucked out for glassing a bouncer." It's a fantastic line. What else? Into the Wild, I loved.
Oh, you went Into the Wild?
Yeah, I really liked Into the Wild. It was macho American twaddle, and yet really high-grade macho American twaddle. Made me just want to kind of, light out across America, really. So I kind of like that. What else? Ratatouille, I liked, I think, for the sort of perfect family film effect. I thought it was beautifully written. And, it's always that classic thing they say about Pixar films, like, ooh, adults can actually enjoy this too. And a good children's film can be enjoyed by everyone. And I thought this was a very good children's film.
It looked beautiful, I thought. The animation was the best I've ever seen.
Paris was fantastic in it. And finally, I would say Zodiac, David Fincher's film about the Zodiac killer who terrorised San Francisco in the late 60s, early 70s. It was this real kind of existential murder mystery with no kind of resolution at the end. And cranked out maybe a little bit too long, and yet superbly kind of maintained pace. And Fincher's great at kind of creating a sort of landscape that looks looks normal on the surface, and then the closer you get to it, there's this kind of stench of decay coming off of it. He's a brilliantly atmospheric director, and this was a really underrated film, I thought.
Yeah, I thought it was wonderful as well. Maybe it's a boys' film, because Larouche was looking at me like, oh.
I thought, God, I just remember sitting there thinking, surely you must have hit the four-hour mark by this point. It looked really sleek.
It couldn't have been long enough for me.
Really sleek, and you're just like, but what? I mean, it's about people who are obsessed about stuff.
Yeah, so?
That's boys.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, for God's sake, get a life, spend some time with your wife.
They're trying to catch a killer.
Yeah, yeah.
Kath, what do you have? Any perhaps non-gender specific offerings in your top five?
Well, there's Silent Light, which we've already spoken about, and Control, and then like Zan, Away From Her as well, which I thought was amazing, and also which showed at the Bird's Eye Film Festival, which is the women's festival in London, which I thought was great this year. And I think it had three films, Away From Her and Stephanie Daly, which never even, I think, got a theatrical release.
Oh, I didn't see that.
And Sherry Baby, which I think were all really strong films that were perhaps ignored when they were released, so it was quite good for them to have a platform, I thought.
Yeah, Maggie Gyllenhaal was, yeah, was excellent in Sherry Baby.
Yeah.
And very good in Lingerie.
And then I've also got the Todd Haynes, I'm Not There. And also Iraq in Fragments, which we didn't talk about with the documentaries, which is an American documentary by James Longley, which is sort of, I guess after all the Hollywood sermons on the Iraq War and the War on Terror, I thought it was a really beautiful, atmospheric film centering on three stories in Iraq, one of them which was an 11-year-old boy who was so sweet. And actually for the first 5 minutes I was watching it, I thought I was watching a feature film because he was so gorgeous to watch.
It came back to me watching The Kite Runner this week, and it looked like the start of Iraq in Fragments. James Long, and it was Oscar nominated, actually. And I thought it was a rather poetic treatment of that. We had him as a guest. We were so impressed. We phoned him up, didn't we? And we got him on Film Weekly. And he said, oh, I don't know, I'm not going to win the Oscar. And he was right. We said we thought he might, but we were wrong. He knew. I thought that was a really beautiful piece of work. For what it's worth, mine in I'll go backwards. Number five was Old Joy, which I thought was really rather beautiful, kind of exploration of friendship and time loss. Again, perhaps a boys' movie, but it was a boys' road trip where they just kind of mourn the loss of record stores and had a beautiful Yola Tango soundtrack. And it was a real kind of, and then it kind of maybe had a homoerotic moment in there, and I thought it was a beautiful film by Kelly Reichardt. Then Bamako, which I mentioned earlier, is an African film. Then I loved The Last King of Scotland. I really thought it was exciting, and it had a great performance, and it had a great Fela Kuti kind of drum on the soundtrack, and I it kind of got to me, and I really thought it was beautiful. Then Zodiac, which I chime with Zan, I thought, but my top film of the year is the one that you've kind of dismissed for being derivative of itself. Shea Meadows' This Is England, which I thought started with the most kind of powerful montage of 80s-ness, not in a twee way, but had Roland Rat in it. Then it had started with Roland Rat and then finished with Bodies Coming Back from the Falklands, and then got kind of, which is the arc that the film then took, this kind of bright scar dancing in the street thing through a kind of vicious racist attack. And I thought it was the genius that Shane has been promising kind of came to fruition. It hasn't got the sort of plangency of Romeo Brass, but it has this wonderful energy to it, and I love the music, and it kind of inspired Trojan to re-release all their Scar albums on the DVD, on CD, so hats off to them for that. Port by hats off to them, I suppose. So that's 2007 well and truly dealt with. Thanks for all of your suggestions for your favourites too, and please keep on adding to the list on the Film Weekly blog. Your comments are greatly appreciated. But before we go, it wouldn't be Christmas without Dickie Attenborough. Not only was he not that long ago Father Christmas himself in the 1994 remake of Miracle on 34th Street, but he also pops up every year in The Great Escape and Jurassic Park on telly in roles that have endeared him to generations of film lovers. Of course, his contribution as a director is no less important. It was 25 years ago, for example, that he won an Oscar for Gandhi. And at the ripe old age of 84, Dickie's back again with a new film, Closing the Ring. It's a twinkly, old-fashioned tearjerker that crosses eras, as an engagement ring unearthed in Belfast has tragic resonances back on a lonely widow's life in America. It stars Shirley MacLaine, Christopher Plummer and Misha Barton, in her first naked scenes, I might add, as well as Pete Postlethwaite and Brenda Flicker. It's a film that might appeal, I suppose, to more mature audiences. But nevertheless, I went to meet Lord Attenborough as he sat on a huge armchair and leant forward, that white beard and those bright eyes proving just too tempting. Lord Attenborough, it's Christmas time. I always feel very pleasured to be speaking. I feel like I'm in Santa's grotto. It's never kind of left me. That do you get that all the time? Do people come up and ask you for Christmas presents?
I'm afraid they do. Yes. And ever since I decided to maintain my beard, it's got even worse. No, I love doing that. It was a huge release, as it were, to play something which was as simple and uncomplicated as that was.
But it's a Christmas classic. So, I mean, I think when you do a Christmas classic, it comes back every year. You could sort of never get shot of it, really.
I'm afraid it does, yes. You could fall asleep the number of times you've seen it. Rather like The Great Escape. The Great Escape comes back every year in Europe. La Grande Évasion, La Grande Évasion. Extraordinary, really, and I suppose Jurassic Park will continue to haunt us in the future.
Yeah, well, we had on the show only a couple of weeks ago Denzel Washington.
Oh, did you?
Yes, who's a fantastic man, but a man who he said he was back in Britain. He was recording the soundtrack to his new film, The Great Debaters, at Air Studios, and really sort of said he owed it. He kind of feels it all started for him here because of what you did for him in Cry Freedom.
Well, that's very generous. I'm very sweet of him. He's one of the major actors who I never tested. I remember meeting him in a hotel in Beverly Hills and asking him to come and see me because I'd seen a bit of St. Elsewhere. And I remember him leaning on the mantelpiece in the room that we were talking. And suddenly he was totally relaxed with me and he was gesturing and so on. I thought, there is Steve Biko. I tested Ben Kingsley just to see whether he really could look like Gandhi, and I tested Robert Downey Jr. To see how real he looked at as a little tramp. But everybody else I've decided to use on instinct, really. Mm.
Well, Denzel was. Well, he sends you anyway. He sends you via the Film Weekly. He sends you lots of love and wishes you best for the closing. He couldn't believe. He said, "How is Dickie?" And I said, "Well, I think he's very well because he's just made another film." And Denzel could not believe it.
Well, no, I believe I'm with him. Mid-80s, I should have more sense.
But why do you do it then at mid-80s? It's not as if you know. It's not as if we know you can make films now. We know you're good. Why do you keep doing it?
You're a rotter, you are, ask a question like that. I suppose really because I have an urge with me to express feelings and demonstrate commitments and so on. And if I was capable, I'd write. I'd write a book. I'd write important tracks or something. Or I'd compose music. I can't. Intellectually, I'm third rate, and I left school when I was 16. But I have a passion to convey feelings, and I find that I can do that not only as an actor, but more importantly as a director, because at the end of the day, it's the director who decides what's on the screen, not the actor. Mm. And I don't want to stop. My energy is not much lessened, and I mean, the thought that I have been born at this time, in this century, with this incredible, within the last 100 years, communication medium of cinema, which Charlie Chaplin realized, who was my great god. I just want to go on doing it. There are so many things I want to say, so many feelings I want to express, and to have the luxury of being able to do that in the cinema is almost unbelievable.
Well, of course, you say that you would write a novel, but the French have always been very keen on you, and I know you're keen on the French as well. They would have you down as an auteur. They would have you down as the camera stylo, if you like, that you do write novels, but with your camera.
But I'm not. I'm not. I'm a narrative filmmaker. I tell stories that beginning, middle, and end. I don't aspire to being an auteur. I don't. I suppose I was going to contradict myself. I suppose Oh, What a Lovely War was original. Mm. But most of the stories that I've done, whether it be Bridge Too Far or Gandhi or Cry Freedom or Love and War or whatever, they are stories. They are about people and about relationships. And because, as I've said already, I don't write, I can tell my stories through movies. And I have so many stories I still want to tell. The thought of retirement is anathema.
No, well, I'm very glad to hear that. I mean, you look in rude health, I must say, and it's just fantastic.
Vulgar health, yes.
Well, if I did have a Christmas wish sitting on your knee, sir, I would say, well, carry on making movies. Because looking at Closing in the Ring, they don't make them like this anymore. No one makes them like this anymore. You're saying that you were lucky to live in an era of 100 years of cinema, but people are very worried about the future of cinema and how it's going to be distributed on the web, on mobile phones. Well, I wouldn't want to see Closing the Ring on the mobile phone. This is a cinema story, one that has always belonged in the cinema, it seems to me. And I get the feeling that you're of the same opinion.
I am. I believe in cinema. You see, when the cinema first emerged, everybody said that theatre would die. Of course, it didn't die. It heightened the expectation of the theatre. When television arrives, and now DVDs, movies will end. They won't ever. There is something magical about experience, feelings, emotions, with other people. And when you sit in that black tunnel and look at that screen at the end, the world goes by you and you can witness things which you could not under any other circumstances, I think, experience. And it's magical. It's wonderful. And I think it would be tragic if the extravaganza and the science fiction obliterated the reality and the truth of movies, because there it is, human beings behaving in truth, in reality, in relationship one to the other, dealing with all the problems that they have to deal with. And if movies can display that and in some way offer not solutions by virtue of presentation and juxtaposition, display the ability to be able to understand a little more how difficult life is and what life means and what the priorities are, I think that's magic. I think that's wonderful. I'd love to fall off the twig in the middle of doing one.
Well, let's hope that doesn't happen. But do you still go to the cinema? Is that public experience? Is that something you do? I know you do it at Stamford Bridge, because I see you there. But that's not the same. That's a horror movie. I know, I see you in
Hey, what do you mean? My God in heaven, now you're really into
Stamford Bridge. Woke you up.
I mean, I can put you under arrest, you know.
Wait till next Sunday when you come to the Emirates. Then. Oh,
are you an arsehole?
Yes,
that?
I am.
Jesus, how can I continue this interview?
I did the nice bit
certain
first.
Certain things are impossible, but cut is all you can say. Gosh, they're a good team, I have to admit.
Well, fallen off.
You did happen to lose yesterday.
Yes, I know. The glee. I thought that was a spring in your step as you've you climbed to third in the table.
Exactly, yeah. I adore soccer. Poppy and I have been to football since 1941 when we first went to Stamford Bridge together. And I'm now involved with the club a bit peripherally, where they're very courteous to me because I'm so old. And I absolutely love it. I just adore it. The suspension of disbelief almost in witnessing this game. Nothing else is in my mind, nothing, except those 11 players. Ah, I adore it.
Well, it's always a pleasure to see you there. And I hope you keep nice and warm over the Christmas period and that Chelsea don't slip up much.
Much, did you say?
You heard that. Congratulations on having another film out. Please, God, we'll do the next one as well.
Thank you very much.
Happy Christmas, Mr. Christmas.
Same to you. Thank you. Thank you.
Lord Attenborough there. It certainly couldn't be Christmas without him. So, that's quite enough Film Weekly for this year. Myself and my producer Paul Noble hope you've enjoyed our coverage of the world of cinema over the last 12 months, and we certainly look forward to bringing you more next year. I hope Santa was kind to you, and may you have the happiest and healthiest of New Year's. Until then, happy viewing.